club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the street certainly won't.
Hello, people, and welcome back to another episode of the FT Lyle podcast. And it is a very special episode as we reach a huge milestone. It's episode 200, and for such a blockbuster one, we needed a blockbuster guest. So we've got none other than Mr. Gav Mack. How the devil are you?
You couldn't have chosen anyone else, really. Pretty sure that I am the pinnacle of guest that you ever had on this show. Am I playing? How are you, Jack?
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, you are. You're right. You're the pinnacle. You're also the most frequent one, I would say. It's good stuff. So, yeah, couldn't think of anyone better, really, to co-host this one.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's nice to be mixing up with so much royalty that has been on your show. So, I'm honoured to be on such a prestigious episode.
Yeah, it's the last 100 seemed to have flown by. I think partly because in that December last year, we did one every day at the month. But yeah, I think the episodes are going thick and fast now. But yeah, still fairly young in this podcasting game. You've been doing it for a number of years, haven't you?
Season pro, mate. Season pro.
Yeah, that's it. We need that level of professionalism on this one, I think.
He says as he takes a massive swig out of a Madry, other beers are available.
They are. Other beers are available. We may get onto that later.
Ooh. Actually.
But this episode, so with it being the World Cup just around the corner, it is going to be World Cup themed. But yeah, before we get into that World Cup in general, how are you feeling about that?
Oh, I'm not that excited about it, if I'm honest. We're days away from it, and it's 3 degrees outside. So, no, I'm not that excited about it. Maybe when I've seen the first kickoff, Qatar versus Ecuador, big game for big names. But after that, maybe the World Cup fever will hit me. But it's just not the same as it is normally, is it? You know, you've had the whole season normally. It gets to about May time and the sun's out, the Premier League season's finishing, the Bundesliga season's finishing, Champions League's here. Then you've got a couple of weeks off where you're just catching up with people, having a few beers or whatever, a couple of friendlies, and then bam, middle of June. It's nearly 30 degrees. You're in the boozer. Everything's just bang on the money. This isn't quite the same, you know. I feel like I now understand what it's like being an adult when adults were back in 2002, having to get up early.
Yeah.
Just the vibe weren't right. You know, it took a while for that to get going, didn't it? So maybe it'll get that a little bit more exciting come the 20th. But until then, if I'm honest, I'm just, it's just November, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. To be, I'm the same. Another reason as well, like Arsenal were doing well. So
yeah, you know, that don't make any sense.
If this was a couple of years ago, we were going through that run of loss, then yeah, give me that World Cup now, so we can kind of end the bad form. But yeah, I think this probably isn't going to do us any favours either, big break in the middle of the season. So yeah, but We're looking at history when we look at the World Cup for this one, and the theme of the episode is the World Cup Dream Team, and we're running a little competition for it as well. So we've asked some friends, fellow podcasts, football authors, football content creators to submit their very best World Cup 11. And this is the criteria for it. So you're submitting your 11 based on their performances at World Cups only. You can only include a maximum of 2 players per nation. There is a clarification on that. So Germany and West Germany, we're sort of counting as one nation, but Yugoslavia, you know, where they sort of split up and stuff, we would count that as separate. So if you had like a Modric and a Croatian that just played for Yugoslavia, you know, that wouldn't count as two. You must include at least two players that haven't won the World Cup. Mm-hmm. You can include a maximum of five World Cup Golden Ball winners. So that's the criteria.
It's a big criteria, Jacques. You know, that's it sort of, you know, puts the cat amongst the pigeons, and hopefully in these we see some different types of names rather than just people just giving me the basic run of the mill stuff, like just picking straight up Germany, I don't know, 1990, or, you know, Brazil 1970. It just makes it a little bit different.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, want a bit of variety. It would be the worst thing if we got all the entries and they were pretty much all the same, other than, you know, a couple of names. But yeah, thankfully, from looking at the teams that we have got, yeah, we have got their variety that we're looking for, so that's good. And in this one, there's 13 entrants. It's going to be unlucky for some, but there will be one lucky winner who will be getting some prizes from, yeah, the winning team that we pick between us. So the prizes are from the sponsors of this episode. So we've got Aidan Williams, who has written a book called The World Cup Nearly Men, and the winner will be getting a copy of that. And they'll also be getting a World Cup wall chart just in time for the World Cup.
Lovely.
From the guys down at Man of the Match Football. We've also got another book up for grabs. So that is from Rob Fielder, and that is called The Complete History of the World Cup and The Complete History of the European Championship. And the final prize, some beers from the Away Days Beer Company. So, yes, I know you do. So
I love beers so much.
Yeah. So there is other beers available, and that is some that can be provided there. So, yeah, if you're listening to this, whoever's won this, well done, and enjoy your prizes. I know you're not in the competition, Gav, but off the top of your head, what would you have gone for? What sort of players are we talking that you'd like to see in this?
Oh wow, that's that put me on the spot. I'd be looking at like Bulgaria's 1994 team. I'd be having Lechkov and Stoichkov in there for sure. I'd want to put in maybe Martin Darlene to go up top alongside Stoichkov. You know me, I like to be different, don't I? I don't like to go what everyone else is doing. I'd only pick players that from World Cup 94 onwards, because that's the first World Cup I remember. I wouldn't be picking anyone that is from 1990 and before. Just heads up, straight away. Ollie Kahn between the sticks for me. He's best goalkeeper of all time, in my opinion. So it'd be an easy one for him to go. Probably have to have three up front, because R9's got to be in there for sure. I'm trying to think if there's any English players that have done anything for since 94. Obviously, they didn't enter in 94.
Cole, possibly, was, because I think he's probably been the best at World Cups.
Well, he's the best left-back of all time, in my opinion. But did he do anything in the World Cup? It was that golden generation. Did anyone do anything?
Well, he marked Ronaldo out of the game that time. But, yeah, you are struggling. I think you're struggling to put an English player from 94 onwards in there.
Yeah. I'd probably look at some of the Swiss guys as well, because, like, you know, Switzerland, they always seem to, like, do bits in the group stage. You could even take the mickey a little bit and put maybe like a Ryan Nelson, someone who we've mentioned before on one of the previous recordings, and put him at the back, because he's part of a unbeaten World Cup team.
Yeah, yeah. And for, you know, a country like New Zealand to do that is an insane achievement, really.
And it sort of opens it up to put some other players in from the more well-known nations in more favourable positions as well. You know, so
yeah,
it'd probably have to be a tactical one. I probably need about 3 weeks to put a team together.
Yeah, that's fine. No, I bet it wasn't fair to do that to you, but I thought I would try and catch you off guard. But yeah, you did have some answers that you had up your sleeve, so that's good. But yeah, what we'll do now then, we will get into those teams. And yeah, first one coming up is the guys at HTO Football.
Hi everyone, this is at HTO Football, responding to the World Cup Challenge, producing our best 11 in World Cup history for the at FTLOL podcast challenge. Fun one, Andrew?
Yeah, always fun, aren't they? You know, I see these pop up on Twitter every now and then, something like this, and you can't help but get involved, basically.
Absolutely. We're picking 11 players, the best 11 players, World Cup history, synonymous, fast and furious, sort of a 4 or 5 minutes clip from us only. There's a few rules, maximum of 2 players per nation, 2 players who haven't won the World Cup, and I think we're limited to some golden ball winners, but we're not getting close on that. Who have we gone for in goal?
Well, Gordon Banks just screamed at me really straight away between the sticks. When I think of Gordon Banks, I think of his England career. I don't think of anything else, really. I know he obviously had an illustrious career, I think, was it at Stoke, maybe? But I think of the 66 win, where he was obviously pivotal, sort of some of those controversial goals in the final. And then, obviously, the save against Brazil in 70, which, yeah, those two things straight away.
Completely agree. And for me, that's why he makes the nod for me. It's because this comes with 2 things. Yes, there's a 66 World Cup win. Obviously, we're biased. We're English. That's our only time we've ever won a World Cup. We're going to think about that. But that famous save, one of the most fated saves in history, is from a different World Cup. A World Cup that England went into as actually heavy favourites, even though it produced arguably the best Brazilian team of all time and the best team of all time. So in the back, who have we gone for? Should we say all the players and then we'll just jump into them? Do you want to just run through them all?
What, the whole defence? The whole back
Yeah,
so gone for 3 at the back, sort of just to cram in some more attacking flair as these challenges always seem to materialise in that way. So we've got Maldini, Bobby Moore and Carlos Alberto for 3 very different reasons. Do you want to give the Maldini pitch?
Yeah, sure. So obviously one of the rules in there was that we had to have a couple of players that haven't won a World Cup, and Maldini is one of them. Obviously, synonymous really with his Milan career, the family dynasty there, but ultimately a phenomenal international career as well. I think more World Cup minutes than any other player in history, a runner-up spot, a third-place spot, but never won it himself. And you got arguably one of, if not the greatest defender of all time, fated with so many trophies, illustrious career, comes second, comes third, retires from international football, and then Italy go and win the World Cup. That's the irony, and I think that's the fantastic story, Maldini. You've got a man who's got, I think, his second most appearances ever, number one in minutes ever in the World Cup. You've got a runners-up spot there and a third-place player. Third-place performance as well. So you've got a great World Cup career without ever going over the line, yet you go and retire, and then your country go and win their very next World Cup. So for me, he had to be in for the near miss. How can a player that great with that big a career go so close, retire, and then get pipped to it? So he's in there.
Yeah, probably arguably the best defender to never win a World Cup.
Yeah. Who you gone for next? You want to go for your...
I mean, Bobby Moore, just for similar reasons with Gordon Banks, to be honest, actually incredibly similar reasons. The 2 exact same matches, funnily enough. So the 66 win where Bobby Moore obviously led England to their first and only ever World Cup victory. That picture of him lifting that trophy is obviously iconic in this country. And the 70 match again against Brazil and the famous moment of him embracing Pelé as well after the game. So,
But we're talking colour TV hitting the world's population as well. And I think that was a moment of sporting unity, football uniting, you know, that we will go on and see in many decades to come. But one of the first examples of, so yeah, brilliant moment. And a player who obviously played in that World Cup gets our last slot. Another sort of factor for us in making these decisions were huge World Cup moments. And what a moment for Carlos Alberto.
Yeah, and I think is there... I would go as far as saying this, he's probably the most World Cup-y player I could think of straight away, because I don't think of anything else with Carlos Alberto, to be honest with you. If you asked me who he played for, I wouldn't know apart from Brazil. And if he scored any other goals, that strike against Italy in the final was probably one of the best goals he'd scored in the World Cup. It's in a
that
final. We covered that in a previous pod, actually, about that whole tournament. And I'd struggle to find a more World Cup-y player than Carlos Alberto, actually.
He's got to be in there. Scorer of the greatest World Cup goal that's ever been. He's in there. Who makes the midfield?
Well, anchoring the midfield is Lothar Matthäus. Quite a grey pick, I guess, but has to be in there. Is he in most World Cup appearances?
Yep.
Lothar Matthäus. That's World Cup-y enough. And although a fantastic player in his own right, and not necessarily as synonymous with the World Cup as like a Carlos Alberto name would be, or a Gordon Banks would be, but to have that many appearances in World Cups and obviously a winner himself,
yeah,
has to be at the base of that midfield.
With, I think, no brainer,
a diamond in there.
Yeah, one of those players in there will be Zidane. Again, we're talking huge World Cup moments. You're at a home World Cup in 1998 against Ronaldo and the reigning champions in the final. What do? You go and upstage the lot. You score a couple of goals in a 3-0 win. You win the World Cup. You are voted World Player of the Year that same year. And then the book ended the career, because then at the other end of the career, the headbutt, the famous headbutt against Italy, Zidane, one of the greatest players of all time, a World Cup winner, a World Cup final goal scorer. He has to be in there. He makes the team.
Yeah, there's a forgettable chapter in the middle of that, though, isn't there, as well, in Korea and Japan, where France go into that tournament huge. I mean, I don't think we can sort of overestimate the reality of that situation. France were going into that tournament huge, huge favourites, winning 98 and 2000 euros. And they go there. Zidane plays for an injury. They don't score a goal. And I think that's part of the story, isn't it, in a way?
Completely.
Well.
And then one of the top two, three greatest footballers of all time, three, four, has to be in there. Similar stories of phenomenal highs and phenomenal lows. Mr. Diego Maradona.
Yeah, well, what else is there to say? I mean, just drama.com, isn't he? I mean, he was the first World Cup that I sort of watched bits of was 94 USA, and he was at the end of his career there, had the drug drama there, but obviously, what came before that was genius.
Yeah, again, you've got a World Cup winner, someone who's dragged their team to the World Cup victory almost single-handedly, which is horrendously unfair to so many fantastic players in the RG side. But nonetheless, dragging his team to World Cup victory, that highs, and then what, eight years odd later, you've got that fall and you're being sent home, failing drugs tests. Diego Maradona, one of the greatest footballers of all time, he has to make this 11. Who else makes it?
Well, he was the last name on our team sheet, actually, wasn't he? No disrespect, but Johan Neeskens for that great Holland side that somehow managed to lose two World Cup finals in the same decade. He scored the first goal in the 94 final against West Germany after a couple of minutes, I believe. And then 4 years later, they lose again on penalties, this time to Argentina.
Yeah, that's 4-1.
Yeah.
Imagine being in the heart of midfield, dragging your team to two World Cup finals in a row, scoring in one of the finals and never quite getting a victory medal. That's got to hurt. So he's one of our other players that didn't quite win it. We've actually got three in our team who don't go and win it, actually. So who else makes the team?
We'll leave obviously the main man till the end. Obviously, it's goes without saying, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think everyone's going to be cramming a Brazilian fella into their side. But Roberto Baggio, who didn't spring to mind until you mentioned him this morning. And I mean, is there a more gut-wrenching penalty kick in World Cup history? Probably not. He had a great Italia 90 as well, where he was the sort of wonder kid at that point. But he was carrying the nation's hopes on his shoulders in America in 94.
Started the tournament quite slowly in 94, to life.
He was injured as well, yeah.
Yeah, man of the match-winning performances, I think, in quarterfinal and semi-final. Obviously, world at his feet, world player at some point along those years. And it's probably the most famous penalty miss of all time in football. And it was in the World Cup final. So for me, in terms of moments, World Cup moments, Roberto Baggio has to be in there. We've got two players left.
Yeah, I My mind's gone blank on the other one. We've obviously got...
Is this a certain German?
Yeah. Oh, of course, of course. Gerd Müller. Yeah, the goal machine himself. My dad's favourite ever footballer. Yeah, he gets in there for obvious reasons, really.
Yeah, obvious reasons. Our only golden boot winner at the World Cup in Europe we've picked. Goal machine, World Cup winner. For me, yeah, another name that's just synonymous with the World Cup, banging the goals. We're probably over on time, so we will talk lastly about the main man, Pelé.
I think we've only got a few seconds left, so Pelé makes it, and that wraps it up.
World Cup, what, three-time World Cup winner? I believe I'm right in saying still the only man who's won three World Cups. I know it's a different game back then in the 50s and 60s, and 70s clearly, but we're talking about a player who was 17 years old, scoring a World Cup hat trick in the semi-final and then scoring two goals in the final. Imagine that today. Now, I know the game has moved on, but if you, the gulf there for a 17-year-old to go and do that against other footballers, score a hat trick in the semi-final, two goals in the final, you go on and you win three World Cups. There is not a name in world football who's more synonymous with the World Cups than Pelé. So 1-11, Banks, Maldini, Moore, Alberto, Mateus, Zidane, Maradona, Baggio, Müller, Pelé. HGO Football out.
That's a great start, that. Didn't expect anything less. So next up, one of our sponsors, it's Aidan, World Cup Nearly Men, with his side.
Hiya, this is Aidan Williams. I'm a football writer and podcaster with These Football Times. Also author of a recent book on the World Cup theme called The Nearly Men, The Eternal Allure of the Greatest Teams That Failed to Win the World Cup. So with that World Cup theme in mind, here is my World Cup dream team. Now, I've got to say, this was very, very hard to come up with, given the rules and restrictions that are rightly put in place, but it made it extra difficult. And my team is unashamedly attacking in outlook. But we'll get to the attackers later. First of all, at the back, in goal, I've gone for Gordon Banks, the Banks of England. The sort of nice assuredness at the back. Not only did he win the World Cup in 1966, of course, but I think his absence was so massively felt in 1970 in the quarterfinal. Once he was missing from the lineup, I think that emphasised just what a great he was to that England team and how important he was. So he's my goalkeeper. There were other options, you know, like Buffon, Casillas, Zoff, Neuer, Yashin, perhaps, would have been another potential call here. But no, I've gone for Gordon Banks, and I'm happy with that. So in defence, I've only gone for a three-man defence, as I say, because I want a very attacking lineup. So my defence is led by the unflappable, magnificent, elegant Franz Beckenbauer, World Cup winner in 1974, and again as a coach in 1990, having got the 86 final as well. He played in the 1966 final. He played in 1970, even in that epic semi-final against Italy with his shoulder strapped up, having dislocated it earlier in the game. He was sheer class, quality and elegance. As is the man I put beside him, Bobby Moore of England, England's captain. Again, unflappable, elegant, all these words, perfect to describe him. I think those two, they were two greats of the game from the same or similar eras. Huge respect for each other, and I think they would work really, really well alongside each other. Now, my other defender is Paolo Maldini. Now, he's one of the two in my team who haven't won the World Cup, as per the rules. Now, Maldini, how he hasn't won the World Cup is a tale of catastrophic misfortune, reached the 1990 semi-final as a 21-year-old, lost on penalties, reached the 1994 final, lost on penalties. Reached the 1998 quarterfinal, lost on penalties. 2002, only got to the second round and dumped out by a golden goal. This is one of the greats of the last few decades of football and of Italian football. A true, true great of his club and his country, but just constantly falling short with the national team. But that gets him into this lineup. I think he is well worth his place. So that is my back line. Moving into the midfield, as things get slightly more attacking, a little bit blurring of the lines between midfield and attack in this team, but hey, it's my team, so it's all good. I've gone for Andres Iniesta in midfield, of Spain, of course. World Cup winner in 2010, scoring the winning goal in the final, in fact. But he was key to everything that went through that Spanish midfield and through that team, along with Xavi, of course. Another notable shout out to him. But Iniesta, I just place him slightly higher in my mind. Maybe it's the World Cup winning goal is the one that achieves that and gets his place in this lineup. So, yep, he's in there. Now, my other midfielders are rather attacking, but, you know, they can sit back behind the front line a little bit. My other non-World Cup winner is Johan Cruyff. Now, he only played in one World Cup, of course, 1974, but his contribution to that World Cup and that team and their style and their swagger and simply everything about this utterly cool early 70s hippie-looking, love bead-wearing, swaggering rock star look of a team. It was all through Cruyff. Everything was Cruyff. He was the leader on the field. He was the inspiration alongside several other magnificent players. It must be said, the likes of Naiskins, Ruud Krol, Van Hanegem, Johnny Rep. I could go on. But Johan Cruyff sits above them all. So he's in my team as well. The beauty is, with the total football in mind, he could play all over, so we're fine there. It also in midfield, like I say, an attacking midfielder, slightly withdrawn, is Roberto Baggio. Now, he is another one who hasn't won the World Cup, so I've gone for three of them, but I think that's fine, because he is another magnificent player who was just unfortunate, to be in that era when Italy narrowly fell short, like Maldini. But, you know, he dragged them through to the 1994 final almost single-handedly. He was key to 1990, along with Scalacci as being their inspiration. So I think he deserves his place. Also, slightly withdrawn from the main attackers, or of the strikers anyway, is Diego Maradona. Now, obviously, you have to get him in your team somehow in this, because he won a World Cup pretty much single-handedly. I'm saying there, but Baggio almost did that in 1994 with Italy. Well, Maradona did that in 1986 with Argentina. So he is in, he has to be in. Which leaves me with some forwards. I've got two out-and-out strikers and one who was, you know, pretty much all-round World Cup hero, left, right and centre, and that's Pele. He's been a part of three World Cup winning teams. Took it by storm as a teenager in 1958. Didn't get to play a full role in 62. But, you know, he was nevertheless part of the winning squad, only playing in the earlier stages before injury. Kicked out of 1966 by injury as well, but then came back in 1970 to win it all again. And they wanted him to play in 74 too, but I think he realised that would have been a step too far. So Pele has to be in there. My other out-and-out strikers are fellow Brazilian Ronaldo. Obviously, you know, he was a phenomenon, the greatest striker I've ever seen, the greatest out-and-out striker of the modern era, to my mind. Again, injury cut his career short, or at least short of what it could have been. And yet, what he still achieved was absolutely astonishing. In World Cup terms, he was part of a World Cup winning squad in 94 without playing, but then 1998 obviously was key. How he wasn't quite present at the final with all that went on there was very, very unfortunate. But he then came back to win it in 2002 and then broke the scoring record in 2006, which subsequently has been beaten by Miroslav Klose, who isn't my final player in the team, however. But it's a fellow German, it's Gerd Müller. Again, absolute great of striking, of forward play. He just lived for goals. He could spin on a dime. He could fire shots in from any short distance range. But, you know, if you gave him the opportunity, or even half an opportunity, he was there. He was in the right place, always at the right time, and he would finish it off. He was clinical. And a key part of West Germany, obviously winning in 1974, but also huge number of goals in 1970 as well. He just was a goals machine. So he has to be in there. So there we go. That is my lineup. It's probably not a very balanced team. Very, very attacking, very lopsided. But hey, I don't care. That's my team. I like these players. And this is my World Cup dream team.
Next up is Michael from 80s and 90s football.
Hello, it's Michael from 80s and 90s football on Twitter. I just want to say a massive well done and congratulations to the FTL guys for hitting their 200th episode. I feel immensely proud and honoured to be taking part today and have taken part in a few episodes in the past. So, my greatest World Cup team of all time. I've gone from a 4-1-3-2 formation. That will become clear in a minute. And as you can probably imagine, my team is fairly retro-based as well. So, in goal, probably the hardest decision, actually. We've gone for Dino Zoft, World Cup winning captain in 1982. Went to World Cup 1970, didn't play. I went to World Cup in 74 and got semi-finals in 78. I think longevity ticks the box. And I think that he's a very, very, very good goalkeeper that goes under the radar and is forgotten about a bit in the modern day. Could have gone for Kahn, could have gone for Buffon, could have gone for Banks, could have gone for Neuer, but we settled for Zoft. So right back, probably not a great surprise. I've gone for Cafu. I'm sure everyone else has as well. I'm not going to go into too much detail on this one, but I think you'll be bombing up and down that right-hand side, which would fit in perfectly for this team. Left-back, Maldini. Again, no great surprise on that one. I think longevity, you know, he ticked the box, 1990 through to 2002. Doesn't go to the 2006 World Cup and Italy win it, but that's football for you. A great, great player. I think one of the greatest left-backs, if not the greatest left-back of all time, and was definitely always going to be in this team. Centre-backs, gone for a very much a ball-playing or ball-winning partnership here in Bobby Moore and Franz Beckenbauer, both World Cup-winning captains. The only other player that came close to this one was probably Baresi, but I think that Bobby Moore and Franz Beckenbauer both winning the World Cup just edge Baresi out in this one. So, moving on to midfield. So, I've gone for defensive midfielder and we picked Lothar Matthäus. And again, that will come clear in a minute when I go through the next five players. But, you know, it was fantastic in 1990, winning the World Cup with obviously West Germany. It was runner-up, you know, in 86, was a German international about 20-odd years. So again, longevity ticks the box. And I think we're just a sensational player and definitely was a difference in 1990. On the right-hand side of midfield, not really a right side of midfield, but we had to put Eusebio, we had to fit him in somewhere. And with Cafu bombing on down the right means that Eusebio could push in more to the middle. That's my justification for picking him. But was a great player in the 66 World Cup. I really put Portuguese football on the map and African football because obviously he came from Mozambique. I think he got 9 goals in that World Cup. Just an absolutely brilliant, brilliant player. On the left, similar, and certainly he went to one World Cup, which he's gone for Johan Cruyff. 1974 was definitely the conductor on the pitch for the total football of Rinus Michels. Just a fantastic player. The impact that he had, you know, didn't go to 78 for personal reasons. Holland obviously were runners-up in 74 and 78. If you went to 78, would they have won it? I don't know, very difficult question with obviously what was going on in Argentina at the time, but it definitely would have helped. Behind the two forwards, we've gone for Michel Platini. Again, this could have been Zidane, but we've gone for Platini. I think Zidane played in a slightly better all-round French team. And I think Platini was, again, another conductor on the pitch. Was like the head of the Magic Square. And, you know, what he did in 86 and what he did in 82 was fantastic. Obviously, Euro 84 sandwiched in between. That doesn't count, but I think at the time he was, you know, one of the best players alongside Diego Maradona. Up front, no surprise, we have gone for Diego Maradona. Maybe not a striker so much, and I think he probably would drop deep to play alongside Platini in a more withdrawn number 10 role, but another superstar player. I still think he's the best player of all time. I've gone through the reasons why on another episode in this podcast on the Argentinian top 10 players. But I think if you can win a World Cup, you're only 86 and get a World Cup, get to World Cup final 99, you're pretty much on your own. I think you you definitely pick yourself into this team. Up front alongside him, we've gone for Pelé. Again, wins the World Cup 58, 1970. I think goes 62. And obviously gets kicked out of 66. But again, another player that was just the impact that he made on the game and on the World Cup is fantastic. Honourable mentions for this team, mainly forwards actually. So, you know, could have gone for Gerd Müller, could have gone for Juice Fontaine, you know, from 1958, could have gone for Puskas, 54. And obviously then the Brazilian Ronaldo, you know, sort of gets the final in 98, obviously wasn't fit, but wins it in a 2002, and just a great, great player. That's my team. Thank you very much. And if you want to find me, I'm on 80s and 90s football at Twitter. Thank you very much.
Following that, it's Rory from the Victory and Vices podcast.
All right, people, it's Rory Spooner, and I am back for the 200th FTLOL podcast episode. So this is my submission for my World Cup dream team. So it's based upon performances at World Cups only. Again, it can include a maximum of two players per nation, must include two players who haven't won the World Cup, and I can include a maximum of five World Cup Golden Ball winners. So without further ado, this is my team. So in goals, I've gone for Oliver Kahn. Oliver Kahn, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, and he lit up the World Cup for Germany. Now, from what I gather, according to my research, again, slightly before my time, I was a youngster at this point, Kahn did win a Golden Ball. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong. I'm pretty sure my research is right. So Oliver Kahn with the Golden Ball, he is in goals. And as you all know, he's German, so he's my first German. At right back, I've got Lilian Thuram, probably one of the most underrated right backs of all time. And Lilian Thuram is a World Cup winner. He was phenomenal. If social media existed back then, trust me, Lilian Thuram would have been a star. I've also got Fabio Cannavaro and Sergio Ramos at centre back, potentially one of the smallest centre back pairings the world has seen, but they're both World Cup winners, and they are both elite centre-backs. Cannavaro was at the heart of the Italian side that won, and we all know what Ramos has done. He's completely cleaned up on the international scene, probably one of the most capped individuals of all time. And to be honest with you, they have a ridiculous pairing between them. So those are my two centre-backs. At left-back, I've got the one and only Roberto Carlos. Again, he's a World Cup winner. And look, if social media existed when Thuram was around, imagine what would have happened if Roberto Carlos existed. The guy was phenomenal. Still the best calf muscles I've ever seen. Sorry, Jack Grealish. But Roberto Carlos has to be a shoe-in at left-back. Could have maybe gone with Ashley Cole. I know he's had some decent performances. Amongst others, Maldini, you could have maybe picked as well. There's a variety of choices. But for me, I look at Roberto Carlos, and I just think the guy is... He really is an icon in world football. For a left back, got to be him. So that's my sort of back line. So again, that's Kahn in goals, German, Thuram, French at right back, Cannavaro, Italian at centre back, Ramos, Spanish at centre back, and a Brazilian left back in Carlos. Now in midfield, I've gone for three. I've gone for Andrea Pirlo. He was man of the match in the final when Italy won, and he was an absolute magician. Again, like Cannavaro, he really pulled all the strings. Italy had no real right to win that. When you look back at their side, they weren't the best side of all time, but they had a good team that knew how to function well. They knew each other's strengths and weaknesses inside out. And Pirlo, along with Gattuso, who I have to give credit to as well, was just absolutely outstanding. So for me, Pirlo has to be in there. He is outrageously good. Luka Modric and Iniesta, they make up the next two. Modric goes without saying, another Golden Ball winner. He is phenomenal. I mean, he's still doing it at Real Madrid. And quite frankly, I think he was unlucky to not be a World Cup winner. I know a lot of people contest his Ballon d'Or win, but look, realistically, Luka Modric is one of the great midfielders of our generation, and I think he deserves a spot in there for what he's done. That Croatia team, whilst they were a good side, they needed someone to drag them to the final, and that person was Modric, very much like Pirlo in that respect. They really put their countries on their back and carried them. And Iniesta is Iniesta, it goes without saying. Andreas Iniesta, is he the greatest? He may well be the greatest central midfielder of all time. I mean, look, he scored in the final and he had the tribute to his friend that passed away. And he is a Spanish icon and a Barcelona icon more than that as well. And look, Iniesta, the things he's done on a football pitch is ridiculous. And his international record speaks for itself, not just at World Cups, but at Euros. You look at the heart of what Spain did. Him and Xavi were, they were just unreal, to be honest with you. And we have to give a special mention to Xavi as well, because he is, quite frankly, very unlucky to be on this list. In a slightly more attacking midfield role, I've gone for Zinedine Zidane. If you know me, I am a Zidane stan. I love Zinedine Zidane. I think he's potentially one of the greatest top... He's definitely in the top five footballers of all time. And he is, I believe, again, a Golden Ball winner too. So, Zidane has to go in there purely because of the way he dominated the final against Brazil. I know he's had the red card against Materazzi, so some people might leave him out. Maybe temperament issues. Yeah, you could beat him with that stick. But, I mean, for me, you've got to put Zidane in there. I think he is incredible. And my top two, I've gone R9. Obviously, you've got to put R9 in. What kind of psychopath are you if you don't? So R9 goes in there and Miroslav Klose. R9 is, he's a legend for all the right reasons and for all the wrong reasons as well. I know a lot of people make fun of his weight, amongst other things. But again, if social media existed at his prime, it would have broke the internet. And Miroslav Klose, again, Klose is just, he's the most, I've never seen a striker that functions as well as Miroslav Klose. He is the stereotypical German striker who was made in a laboratory somewhere, and he just knows where the net is every single time, and he scores on the big occasions. Now, Miroslav Klose, for me, I could have maybe swapped him with a couple of other people. I know a lot of people will probably go with Messi, but for me, it's Klose. Not forgetting that Zizou, R9, and Modric are all Golden Ball winners as well, so that's my four in there, and my two that never won it is Modric and Kahn. But again, going back to my team, that's Kahn in goals, Thuram at right back, Cannavaro and Ramos at centre back, Carlos at left back. Then we've got central midfield of Pirlo, Modric and Iniesta, with Zidane in the attacking midfield role. And in front of him, I've got R9 and Klose. Let me know what you think, people. Get at FTLOL, get at Victory and Vices podcast, get at me, Rory Spooner. Let me know your opinion. 200th episode for the gang. Congratulations to them too. I'm out. That's my team.
We've got another one of our sponsors now. Next up, we've got Rob Fielder with his side.
Hi all, I'm Rob Fielder, author of The Complete History of the World Cup and The Complete History of the European Championship. And this is my all-time World Cup 11. So starting in goal, this was one position where I really had a bit of a dilemma. I thought about Dino Zoff, Gordon Banks, Ubaldo Fijol and Gianluigi Buffon, but I've gone for Iker Casillas of Spain. I'm sure he's one player that everyone will be familiar with, and although he didn't have an enormous amount to do in 2010, he did what he needed to and also produced some really important saves behind an excellent back line. He was a brilliant shot stopper, solid in his distribution, and undoubtedly one of the great goalkeepers of modern times. At right back, I've chosen Francis Lilian Thuram. Absolutely outstanding as a right back in 1998, he also shone as a central defender in 2006 as France reached the World Cup final. His entire career, he only scored two goals, but both of them came in the 1998 semi-final victory over Croatia. A real man for the big occasion. I've chosen Thuram because, as well as being a World Cup great, he offers real defensive solidity, which I'm going to need with some of the more attacking options further forward. He might not be in the best going forward himself, but it's hard to think of many better pure defenders. The first centre-back I've chosen is Bobby Moore. England's captain in the 1966, he exuded class and composure on the ball, read the game so well and distributed it excellently. In 1970, he put aside all the controversy that surrounded him before the tournament to play with real distinction. From that World Cup, his iconic tackle on Jairzinho and embrace with Pelé will be eternal images of the World Cup. My second centre-back is the Dutchman Ruud Krol. He could play left-back, as a libero, or in central midfield, and tended to excel wherever he chose to play. In 1974, he was a left-back and was great, and in 1978, he played in the centre and was just as good again. Two losses in World Cup finals shouldn't count against him. At left-back, I've chosen Paolo Maldini, and although he never won the World Cup, he certainly came close. He played more minutes in the World Cup than anyone else, and that indicates just how deep he went on so many occasions. He was excellent in 1990 as Italy fell in the semi-finals to Argentina, and in 1994 performed well at centre-back in the absence of Franco Baresi. Italy again lost on penalties, this time to Brazil. In 1998, Italy lost once again on penalties, this time to France, the eventual champions. And in some ways it seems a little bit odd that in the first World Cup after Maldini's retirement from international football, Italy ended up winning the tournament. But I think he'd have definitely enhanced the 2006 winning vintage. One big name that I could have chosen at centre-back is Franz Beckenbauer, but I've decided to play him in central midfield where he played in 1966. Young Beckenbauer was a really dynamic player who surged past people with pace and drive and was a potent goal threat. By the time West Germany won on home soil in 1974, Beckenbauer converted to become a sweeper, which is the position he's most associated with. Again, he was to the fore, but I think in World Cup terms, he played his best football in midfield, also excelling in that position in 1970, where West Germany reached the semi-finals before losing to Italy in one of the great games of the World Cup. Alongside Beckenbauer, I've chosen another German legend, Lothar Matthäus. He was the captain of the 1990 winners, playing under Beckenbauer as the manager by then. He had a tremendous tournament, scoring four goals. Also brought great drive and tenacity. He was a natural winner and adds real steel into the midfield. He holds the record for more World Cup appearances than anyone else, making his bow at the tournament in 1982 and still featuring in the side who reached the quarterfinals in 1998. By that point, Matthäus had followed the example of Beckenbauer in converting to play as a sweeper, but he was far more impactful in central midfield, and I'd use him there. Someone who I'd imagine would be in almost any World Cup 11 is Diego Maradona. He didn't appear at the 1978 World Cup, which Argentina hosted and won, but by the time 1982 came round, he was already regarded as one of the best players in the world. Although he didn't quite hit his best for that tournament, he was back in 1986, and it's hard to overstate the impact he had. His performances against England in the quarterfinal and Belgium in the semi-final were two of the best in World Cup history, but he was consistently outstanding with his dribbling and creativity. As well as winning that tournament, he also helped Argentina to the final 4 years later, even if he only showed flashes of his brilliant best. In 1994, of course, he was thrown out of the competition for failing a drug test, but had some great cameos before then. For my right winger, I've chosen the Brazilian legend Garrincha. He was a World Cup winner in 1958, but it was 1962 when he played his best football. With Pelé injured, the little bird stepped up to be the team's match winner, brushing aside England in the quarterfinals, Chile in the semi-finals, and then beating Czechoslovakia in the final. One of the greatest dribblers in the history of the game, I think he was such a live wire and bring an element of flair and unpredictability to the team. One thing we can be sure of is his defensive work would be minimal, so it definitely helps to have Lilian Thuram at right back behind him. As my central forward, I've got one of the absolute essential selections, probably the greatest player in World Cup history, Pelé. First starred in the 1958 World Cup as a 17-year-old and never looked back from there. He scored a tremendous goal against Wales in the 1958 quarterfinals, a hat-trick in the semi-final against France, and then another two in the final against Sweden. Injuries took their toll in 1962 and 1966, and there were doubts as to whether he'd ever play in another World Cup. But he came back in 1970 with another sensational display, playing slightly deeper than previously and conducting play as well as providing some of the most memorable moments in World Cup history. There's no question in my mind that he has to be part of the 11. Finally, on the left flank, I've chosen a bit of a wild card in Eden Hazard, who I thought was the outstanding player of the last World Cup. Overall, Belgium were probably the most impressive team in Russia, and Hazard's combination with De Bruyne and Lukaku was at the heart of so much of their play. His dribbling in particular was fantastic, and he was a constant menace. I'm not sure there are many defences who could deal with his quality on the ball as well as that of Garrincha on the right. So I think it's going to be a tough evening for any defenders playing here. So in conclusion, my 11 would be Casillas in goal, Thuram at right back, Bobby Moore centre back, Ruud Krol alongside him at centre back, Paolo Maldini at left back, central midfield of Franz Beckenbauer, Lothar Matthäus and Diego Maradona just in front of them. On the right, I would have Garrincha. On the left, Eden Hazard. And then leading the line, Pelé. I don't think many World Cup 11s would be able to deal with the quality that they have to bring.
It's another Rob now. Rob from Premiership years. Is his 11.
Hi guys, this is Rob from the Premiership Years account on Twitter. That's at Premiership YRS Years. Thanks for having me on this episode. Really intrigued to hear what everybody's going to be choosing and the idea. It's an interesting one. I'm really, really happy to be taking part. I've got my team. It's locked in. It was really fun, actually. The main challenge I found was finding that the best players and the biggest names may not necessarily be the ones I'm choosing, because their World Cup performances may not necessarily be in keeping and fit into the framework we've been given. I'm sure there'll be tremors through the footballing Twitter world when they see some of the names I've left out. So we'll get started. In goal, I've got Iker Casillas, the Spanish goalkeeper. He played at 4 World Cups between 2002 and 2014. He captained his country to glory in 2010, lifting the trophy in Johannesburg, keeping a clean sheet in the final against Holland. And that was the first time a European nation had lifted the World Cup outside of Europe. He also made 1,000 appearances, over 1,000 appearances, I should say, and won the Golden Glove at the World Cup, where his country were victorious in 2010. And, of course, was named in the team of the tournament. So I think that's a pretty good pedigree, I think. In defence, I've got Fabio Cannavaro. He's another player who captained his country to glory 2006. Italy, he'd been named Footballer of the Year in Serie A the year before, joined Real Madrid that summer, and then went on to win the Ballon d'Or the same year. Italy only conceded 2 goals in winning that World Cup. One was an own goal, one was a penalty. That's still a record, so I think that proves very strong choice, I think. And in fact, another Italian defender, because Italians are good at defending, but that's not a revelation to anybody. Paolo Maldini, I've chosen. He played at 4 World Cups between 1990 and 2002. He didn't play in 2006 when Cannavaro, the aforementioned Cannavaro, won the tournament. He'd retired by then, but he did play and got to the final in 94. And he kept a clean sheet in that final but lost on penalties. He's also Italy's most capped player. Again, a real icon of the game. I've also chosen Lothar Matthäus, who's possibly sitting in front of the defence. I'm not too sure, but he's wearing the number 4 shirt anyway. A man who played in 5 World Cups, 25 games in all. Nobody's played that many World Cup finals games than he has. He's the most capped German of all time. He won the World Cup in 1990. That's the same year he won the Ballon d'Or, so that's the World Cup I'm choosing him for. Another man who captained his country to glory was Bobby Moore, and he's in my side as well. He was only 25 when he captained England to glory, of course, at Wembley, 1966, unforgettably. He was named in the team of the tournament, and he had a very, very good tournament, famously, and won over 100 caps. So I needed to get an Englishman in there, and that's the one I've chosen. I did find defence was a little bit harder. Okay, so into midfield. On one wing, I've got Johan Cruyff, who never won the World Cup but did win the Ballon d'Or 3 times and was the player of the tournament in the 1974 World Cup. He scored 2 goals in the second round victory over Argentina on the way to the final, but they unfortunately lost to the hosts, West Germany. But a very, very, I think we can all agree, a very memorable tournament for the Dutch and for Cruyff in particular, as total football shone on the biggest stage. On the other wing, I've got Jairzinho, the Brazilian who lit up the 1970 World Cup. He scored in every round of the competition, as Brazil won, and that's a feat that's never been matched. Excuse me. He did score 2 more goals at the 1974 World Cup, but it was his peak performances, I'd say, at the 1970 tournament that's got him in my team. Making up the midfield, I've got Zinedine Zidane, a football genius who was a talisman for France as they won the tournament in 1998. Paris was purring the night that Zizou scored two headers in the final, and Brazil were brushed aside as the hosts won the tournament. He won the Ballon d'Or that year, unsurprisingly. He did score in another World Cup final, meaning he's got three World Cup finals goals, and nobody's got more. He was obviously sent off infamously later in the game, but we won't talk about that. It was the 98 tournament where he became a real icon of World Cup football, I'd say. Right, I've got three up front, and frankly, I could have had another five because some of the names I've chosen to leave out somewhat scandalous. But my first one is Gerd Müller. So despite Jairzinho's incredible feat of scoring in every round in 1970, it was actually Müller who won the Golden Boot that year. And that was on the back of having won the European Golden Shoe for scoring 42 goals in 38 games for Bayern, which I found incredible when I was doing my research. He scored 10 goals at the 1970 World Cup, but the West Germans made only the semi-final stage before being knocked out by Italy in that iconic match in the World Cup semi. 4 years later, though, Müller and West Germany won the tournament, and that was back in West Germany when they won it in 1974. But yeah, so many goals, so many memories for Gerd Müller. Alongside him, I've got Ronaldo. He's not Portuguese, he is Brazilian. Only Miroslav Klose has got more World Cup finals goals in tournaments than the Brazilian Ronaldo. He went to four consecutive World Cups, but he didn't play in 94. He did play and score in 98, 2002 and 2006. In fact, in the 2002 final, he scored both the goals, and he later called the 2002 Brazil side the best team he ever played in. He's got two medals because he did get a medal for winning in 94, even though he was a non-playing squad player, as well as a runner-up medal from 1998. He won the Golden Boot in 2002 and was twice named in the team of the tournament. So a pretty healthy World Cup pedigree, I'd say. And making up the 11, just behind the front two, I think I'd play him, is the iconic, and that's not misusing the word, I don't think, Diego Maradona. 1986 was his tournament. It really was. In many ways, it was his tournament. I think his performances will never be forgotten. He was an iconic player at his iconic peak. He dragged Argentina to glory. He scored both goals in the quarterfinal. He scored both goals in the semi-final. And he won the Player of the Tournament award, ultimately, lifting the trophy as captain, I think. He did also make the final in 1990, but were beaten by West Germany, who seemed to have beaten almost everybody in world football at one tournament or another. But yeah, 86, absolutely could not leave him out of this side for those performances, never to be forgotten. And that's my 11. Thank you very much for having me, guys. It was a pleasure. It was really fun to do. And I appreciate you hearing my thoughts, hearing my World Cup dream team. I hope you like it. If you don't, I'm very sensitive, so maybe keep it to yourself. thanks very much. Keep smiling, and I'll see you soon. Thank you. That's Rob from Premiership Years. Bye-bye.
Now we've got AFC Finners. Here's his team.
Hello, everyone. My name is AFC Finners, YouTuber and football history enthusiast. Today, I'm going to share with you my World Cup all-time XI. This is based on the performances of individuals at World Cups and what difference their role in the team made. We are going with a 4-3-3 formation, and let's start off in goal. Goalkeeper, Gordon Banks. The Sheffield shotstopper, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, this was an easy choice. In 1966, he didn't concede a goal until the semi-finals, and only conceded three in total as England became champions of the world, and Banks played in every second of England's victorious campaign. Banks held out the Germans in extra time, as England rode to victory. Solid and dependable, England could not have done it without him. And who could forget his performance in 1970? Pelé headed the ball down, and Banks made an impossible save. Pelle and Banks laughed about how they thought it was a goal, whilst Bobby Moore quipped that Banks used to catch those. The importance of Banks was symbolised by how England's went out. Before their quarterfinal against West Germany, Banks had a severely upset stomach and was forced to sit the game out. England lost 3-2. With Banks in goal, England could well have won. Right back, Carlos Alberto. The score of perhaps the greatest World Cup goal ever scored. This spot has to go to the captain of the 1970 Brazil side. It was a team who many said had defence as their weakness, but with him at right back, they were safe as houses. He had incredible dribbling and playmaking abilities, rare for a defender of that era, but something common now, showing he was years ahead of his time. The 1970 final was his last game at a World Cup, but what a way to bow out. By scoring a goal that was a work of art. Centre-back, Bobby Moore. Another world of standout players from both 66 and 70 here. The iconic England captain, and still the only one to lead them to a World Cup trophy. While the greatest defenders ever to play the game, it wasn't just Gordon Banks responsible for England only conceding 3 in 1966. And what an incredible assist he got for Jeff Hurst's goal in the final. Ramsey encouraged Moore to just boot it out, but Moore played a sublime 40-yard pass upfield to Hurst, who netted to seal his hat-trick and the World Cup. His performance in 1970 was incredible too, with his tackle against Pelle in their matchup being one of the greatest ever seen. Pelle described Moore as the greatest defender he ever played against. Centre-back, Franz Beckenbauer. Der Kaiser, perhaps the greatest defender of all time. The way the West German could make a tackle, then glide upfield as a playmaker, was something to behold. Beckenbauer played in 3 World Cups for West Germany, finishing as a runner-up in 66, third place in 1970, before being the first captain to lift the new World Cup trophy in 1974. He scored an incredible 4 goals at the 66 World Cup, and also scored the first goal as West Germany came back to defeat England in the 1970 quarter-final. West Germany lost the semi-final 4-3 to Italy, but Beckenbauer fought like a warrior, refusing to come off despite his shoulder being dislocated. In the 1974 final, he man-marked Cruyff to stop the Dutch playing their total football system, as he became third-time lucky as they won 2-1. If there's been a better defender than the very deep-lying playmaker Franz Beckenbauer, I'm yet to see them. Left-back, Ruud Krol. While the start of the 1974 Dutch side, Ruud Krol could play anywhere across the back line, but would often serve at left-back. He was another full-back years ahead of his time, able to begin counter-attacks as soon as he won the ball. Krol started for the Netherlands at 2 World Cups, as they came so near, yet so far, by losing the 74 and 78 finals. Krol may never have touched a World Cup, but he certainly touched the stars. Right midfield, Johan Cruyff. Another star of 74, and the greatest player in Dutch history, Johan Cruyff blew the world away in 74. The iconic Cruyff turn, and the freedom with which he and his teammates played, he was named Player of the 74 tournament. The Dutch blew away teams on their way to the final, with Cruyff netting a big goal in a victory over world champions Brazil. Cruyff literally hit the ground running in the final, as an incredible run into the box saw him brought down, leading to a penalty converted by Johan Neeskens before West Germany had even touched the ball. It is a tragedy that Cruyff never won the World Cup, but it doesn't take anything away from what an incredible footballer he was. Central midfield, Lothar Matthäus. The only German to be named FIFA World Player of the Year, few can disagree with Matthäus' place as one of the game's greatest ever midfielders. He received 150 caps for West Germany over 20 years, a record no German has exceeded since. A runner-up with a bit part role in 82, Matthäus solidified his spot in the team for the 86 World Cup, and scored the winner in the round of 16 game against Morocco. He was tasked with the daunting prospect of man-marking Diego Maradona in the final, and for the most part, managed to keep him quiet. But Maradona would still assist the winner with 6 minutes to go, as West Germany fell short once again. However, without Matthäus, Maradona could well have torn the Germans to shreds. In 1990, Matthäus was third-time lucky. He scored 4 goals in the tournament, including a winner in the quarter-finals against Czechoslovakia, and he captained the side as they got revenge over the Argentines with a 1-0 win. He played 2 more World Cups in 94 and 98, and whilst he didn't lift the trophy again, he sealed the record for the most appearances by a player at a World Cup finals with 25. Left midfield, Andres Iniesta. It was a tough choice between Xavi and Iniesta from the Spain squad of 2010, but Iniesta just edges it. A vital cog in the incredible Spanish machine of 2010, Iniesta is one of the most elegant players to ever grace the game, and he scored the biggest goal in Spanish history in the final. He was shortlisted for the Golden Ball that tournament and won the Man of the Match award in the final. Without Iniesta, Spain may never have been top of the world. Right forward, Diego Maradona. While saying that the Argentina squad of 86 was a one-man team is harsh, they certainly would not have won that World Cup without El Diego. Two goals in the quarter-final against England, including a solo run that led to the goal of the century, and two more against Belgium in the semis, took Argentina to their second final in three tournaments. Whilst Maradona didn't score in the final, he assisted Jorge Burruchaga's winner. El Diego took on the world in 1986, and emerged victorious in style. He came agonisingly close to retaining the world crown in 1990, as Argentina finished runners-up, and also scored in the 1994 World Cup, performing an iconic celebration by screaming into the camera, but it would be his last international appearance after he failed a drugs test. Nonetheless, his 86 performance lives in legend, and Argentina have not won a World Cup since. Centre forward, Pelé. The easiest choice of all. The only person to ever win three World Cups as a player, Pelé burst onto the scene as a 17-year-old in 1958, netting twice in the final as Brazil beat Sweden 5-2 to win their first World Cup. Only days before, Pelé had scored a hat-trick as they defeated France in the semi-finals. Pelé was involved in the 1962 World Cup, scoring in a 2-0 win against Mexico, but an injury in the next game saw him ruled out of the tournament. 1966 was disappointing, but Pelé was on fine form in 1970. He scored once against Czechoslovakia and twice against Romania in the group stage, and provided a number of assists as Brazil were back in the final. Pelé opened the scoring against Italy with a header, and also assisted two goals, including Carlos Alberto's legendary strike. Pelé was the driving force behind perhaps the greatest ever World Cup campaign, and it is no wonder that many consider him the greatest. Left forward, Sandor Coxis. Ferenc Puskas may be the poster boy of Hungary's great side of the 1950s, but their standout performer at the 1954 World Cup was Sandor Coxis. Coxis got an astonishing 11 goals at the tournament, scoring a hat-trick in his side's opening game, before getting four in an 8-3 win over West Germany. Two more followed in the quarter-final win over Brazil, before another brace in a semi-final win over Uruguay. The only game Coxis didn't score in that tournament was the final, and it cost the Hungarians dearly, as they suffered a shock 3-2 defeat to West Germany. One of the most underappreciated players of all time, Coxis's performance at the 1954 World Cup was nothing short of sensational, and he filled the void left by Puskas's injury that saw him miss two games brilliantly. Coxis finished his international career with 75 goals in 68 games. And that concludes the AFC Finners World Cup XI. Thank you so much to the FootLol podcast for allowing me the opportunity to do this. I hope you all enjoyed, and thank you for listening.
And here's Gary Mantle, also known as Fanta Mantle, with his greatest 11.
Hi, my name's Gary Mantle, known on Twitter as Fanta Mantle. This is my World Cup Dream Team 11. In goal, I've got Jose Luis Chilavert. I love South American goalkeepers. In the 90s, you used to tune in to watch Paraguay games just to see if he was going to score a goal, because he used to take the free kicks, and he was also a pretty decent goalkeeper. Right back, Lilian Thuram of France. Again, from France in 98, he was incredible. Scored twice in the semi-final against Croatia. Really came up when they needed him, because he hadn't scored goals for them before then. And in 2006, he came out of retirement and played again, and they got to the final. The centre-backs, I've gone for a centre-back partnership. The winners from 2010, Sergio Ramos and Gerard Pique. Ramos did play a lot as a right-back, I think, in that tournament, but that Spanish defence was pretty much impenetrable. They let in one goal in the first game, and then nobody scored past them after that. So those two are making up the partnership. Left back, I didn't see him play that much. Andreas Bremer from Germany. He scored in the semi-final and in the final in 1990. Unfortunately, the semi-final was against England. He was also playing in the tournaments in the 80s. This is for West Germany, as they were back then. Centre midfields. So I'm going to go for two central midfielders. Luka Modric, 2018, absolutely immense. Croatia had a decent team, but he was undoubtedly the star. He did win the Golden Ball. I've always admired him as a player. It was good to see him do it on an international stage and lead, let's say, an untraditional country to a World Cup final. So he has to make it in just for that 2018 performance. Next to him, Paul Gascoigne. Gazza, the reason that I fell in love with football in the first place. My earliest memories of football are from the 1990 World Cup. And back then, the whole nation had been swept up with Gazza mania. Absolutely iconic, even the semi-final with the tears. And this was what got me into football. And that's something that's continued, obviously, ever since then. Three attacking midfielders I've gone for. Again, somebody I didn't see that much, but I've read his autobiography, Diego Maradona. What a fascinating player. What a fascinating man. His book's incredible. His whole motivation for why he was so good in the World Cup was off the back of being left out of the World Cup in 1978, a tournament that they won, but that he still felt that he should have been involved with. And he's just always wanted to prove everybody wrong ever since then. Obviously scores the iconic two goals, again, unfortunately, against England in 1986. Plays in 1990, manages to turn the whole of Napoli against their own country, against Italy in the semi-final, and gets them to the final. And even the way that he bowed out in 1994, the man is just an absolute icon. Another icon for me, alongside him, from his performances in the 90s, Roberto Baggio. Used to love watching him play as well. Just had this aura, the ponytail added to it. He absolutely burst onto the scene in Italia 90. Again, I was very young, I was only 6 years old, but I still remember watching him like slalom through teams. Like, no, people hadn't really heard of him. This was before he broke the world record transfer. I'm sure they'd heard of him in Italy, but everywhere else, we didn't have Football Italia back then. And he was just incredible. He did the same in 94. He massively was like the reason for them getting to the World Cup final. Unfortunately, of course, he is best remembered for missing that penalty. But he's still an absolute icon, even for having done that. And then, alongside him, Zinedine Zidane, who I just don't think you can leave out if you watch him World Cups. In 98, absolutely incredible. 2006, again, there's just some performances. One against Brazil. You can still watch the highlights on YouTube. He's just absolutely majestic. You don't know how a guy like that big and with that frame can be so graceful. But also have the influence on games that he did. When they needed a winning goal, he was the one that scored it. Even in the World Cup final that he obviously got sent off in, he was still the one that scored their goal. He still scored the penalty. I mean, who Panenka's Buffon in off the bar in a World Cup final? Like, it takes some man to do that. So there's only one left. And so he's going to play as a lone striker, but he is my favourite player of all time. It's the Brazilian Ronaldo. Again, an icon in the 90s. And from France 98, everybody that was watching that tournament can still remember from memory what boots Ronaldo was wearing. If Brazil were playing, you were tuning in, and it was because you wanted to watch Ronaldo. Tournament doesn't end very well for him. He has the seizure on the day of the World Cup final. Plays anyway. You can tell he's not really all there. Sad way to bow out. In the next 4 years, he has several knee injuries, operations. He comes back about sort of March, April 2002. Everyone thinks he's finished. He's put on a bit of weight. The knees are gone. And then he just takes the tournament by storm. Scores in every round, apart from against England. It's nice to put someone in that actually didn't do something against England for once. I think he won the Golden Ball. He won the Golden Boot anyway. He was the second top scorer in the World Cup. But when he was playing, everyone just wanted to watch. So it's him for me. So I'll run through the 11 again. It's a 4 4-2-3-1 is Chilavert, Thuram, Ramos, Piqué, Bremer, Modric and Gascoigne, Maradona, Baggio, Zidane behind Ronaldo. Cheers, guys. Thanks for listening.
Now we come to Michael from Man of the Match Football, another one of our sponsors. And here's his team.
Hi, I'm Michael from Man of the Match Football. So we are an online shop that sells everything for football fans, like prints, mugs, coasters, T-shirts, that kind of thing. Pleased to be on the podcast. And yeah, so without further ado, I'll introduce I'll go through my World Cup 11. So in goal, I've gone for a bit of a left field choice, probably Jose Luis Chilavert from Paraguay, because basically, who doesn't love a free kick and penalty taking goalkeeper? Bit of a loose cannon and a bit of a different character as well. So they're always good to mix it up a bit. right back, I've gone for Cafu from Brazil, obviously. Captained them to the title in 2002. What a player! What an engine! Reliable up and down the right wing all day. Left back, I've gone for Lahm from Germany. So yeah, like Cafu, great engine on him. Fantastic technical player. Very underrated, I think. I think he had a stupid stat of never being sent off as well in his career for a defender in the modern game is pretty unique. So I've gone for him at left back. Centre back, I've gone for Maldini in Italy. So basically, I couldn't pick a World Cup 11 or a World Football 11 without putting this guy in. obviously, a lot of people deem him as the best defender ever, and I'm probably no different there. What a player. Hardly looked like he was breaking sweat. Always looked $1 million and fantastic player. Beside Maldini, I've gone for Desailly from France. Absolute mountain of a man, rock of a player. Obviously, a big part of their run to the to the title on home soil in '98. So yeah, I've gone for him at centre back alongside Maldini. So defence is Cafu, Maldini, Desailly, and Lahm. I've gone for three in midfield. Then, so I've gone for a deep line midfielder. I've gone for Pirlo from Italy. Another who hardly looked like he broke sweat. Unbelievable technician, fantastic on the dead ball, range of passing, made the game look terribly easy, and always seemed to have space, and yet never looked like he had legs or pace, but you know, played the game at his pace and dictated play. So yeah, fantastic player. I've gone for Iniesta of Spain. Obviously scored the winner. He's a bit of a hero in Spain. Scored the winner in the final when they went on to win it in 2010, I think it was. Incredible player. Could basically play anywhere across the attacking midfield positions. And yeah, fantastic player. And third midfield player then is Zidane. Obviously, you know, not much to say really about this, you know, that hasn't been said already. He's unbelievable, probably one of the best midfielders and talents that's ever played the game. Even at the ripe old age, obviously it all ended in a bit of a controversy with the headbutt, but you know, in '98 scored two goals in the final to help them win it. And yeah, just influential, fantastic player all round, really, and could not leave that guy out. I've gone for three up front as well. So I've got Maradona on the left. Probably his heyday was a little bit before my time, but you know, from all accounts, he basically dragged Argentina to the title in '86. Done it, you know, obviously had a good side behind him, but yeah, rightly seen as one of the best players ever. On the other side, I've gone for Messi, who, you know, in my lifetime is the best footballer I've ever seen. Unbelievable talent, you know, consistently just scoring a crazy amount of goals and assists and everything, basically just a natural talent and, yeah, unbelievable player. And then the forward position, then I've gone for Ronaldo from Brazil. So R9, whatever you want to call him. yeah, obviously, even after the injuries hit, and, you know, he's still top scorer in 2002. But, yeah, I think, you know, across the night, across the three World Cups, I think he played in and scored like 13 goals. I think it's been surpassed now by closer, but yeah, what a player, you know. Pace, technique, power, finishing. So yeah, not a bad front three, I think, with Maradona, Messi and Ronaldo. So just to run through, got Chilavert in goal, Cafu, Maldini, Desai and Lam at the back, Pirlo, Zidane and Iniesta in the midfield, and then Maradona and Messi either side of Ronaldo up front. So that's my team. I'm pretty happy with it. And yeah, thanks again for having me on. Cheers, guys.
Next up is another one of our sponsors. It's Josh from the Away Day Beers Company with his 11.
Hi there, this is Josh from Away Days Beer Company, here to give you my dream World Cup 11. It's not been easy, but I think I've got a cracking lineup, and we will start with the goalkeepers. First up, between the sticks, for me, it can't be anyone else. He featured in 5 World Cups. He won one of them. 176 caps for his country. 2006 World Cup, only conceded 2 goals. Saved penalties from legends like Trezeguet, Zidane as well. It is Mr. Gianluigi Buffon, the Italian legend. For me, he's the man between the sticks that's leading my dream World Cup 11. Right, so the first of my 2 centre-backs, I think this guy would be featuring in most people's kind of dream World Cup 11s. It is, of course, Franz Beckenbauer, just a rock of a defender. Won it as a player in 74 and then, of course, went on to win it as a manager at Italia 90. He's the only defender, you know, to win the Ballon d'Or twice. There's a reason for that. You know, so many people have said they think he is the best defender of all time. Just showed up in World Cup, showed up at clubs as well, read the game. Whether he was playing kind of sweeper, centre-back, holding midfielder from time to time, just an all-round great or truly great defender. So, yeah, Beckenbauer takes my first of 2 centre-back slots. So, to partner Beckenbauer, again, I think a lot of people will probably have this guy next to him. It's, of course, Bobby Moore. Of course, won the World Cup in 66 with England. What a moment. Famously quoted as well by Pele. I can't remember the quote exactly, but he said, you know, whilst Beckenbauer was really difficult to face, that actually he always thought Bobby Moore was the harder of the two defenders to face. So yeah, it would be Bobby Moore partnering Beckenbauer at the back for me. Conceded 3 goals all in the whole of the 66 tournament, I think. Just, yeah, a leader, a proper defender. Now, I've gone for kind of a 4-1-3-2 formation, and with that, I want a right back who loves to get forwards, who's a rock when he needs to be at the back, and that for me is the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Cafu from Brazil. What a defender, you know, growing up, watching him play, going forwards, ball at his feet, you know, could dribble, can cross, can pass. But then, you know, work at the back, never afraid to put in a challenge. Won the World Cup 94, 2002. Just an incredible right back, and he would be my go-to. Now, as I said, I like wing backs, full backs that can get forwards, can come back, can work, can create, can just put in a challenge when you need it. And for me, and this might be a bit of a curveball, my left back in my dream 11 would be France 98 winner Lizarazu. Just one hell of a left foot. The amount of times, you know, we'd get to the byline, put a cross in, pull a ball back, and there'd be Trezeguet, Henri, Petit, Zidane, you know, players just there. He'd tee them up to put the goals in, and a hell of a left back. And obviously, he has that secret weapon, big Rory Delap style long throw on him. For me, he's the go-to left back in a dream World Cup 11. Now, in this formation, with these fullbacks bombing forwards, for me, you've got to have somebody that sits in the middle of the park, you know, doing the dirty work, breaking play up, putting challenges in, feeding the more attack-minded players further up the pitch. And growing up, watching this guy play, I don't think there was anyone better. And there's a lot of people that have said over the years that he might be the best all-round footballer ever. 150 caps for his country, 23 goals. Won the 1990 World Cup with I believe he got one or two amazing goals against Yugoslavia. It is Germany's Lothar Matthäus, probably absolutely destroyed the pronunciation of that. But yeah, what a rock of a midfielder. He takes kind of that ball-winning midfielder spot in my Dream 11. Now, next up, once Matthäus is tackled, got the ball, he needs somebody to feed it to. Somebody that can get the ball at their feet, read the game, pick a pass, or have the ability to take it forwards to feed those strikers. And again, I don't think there's anyone better with the ball at their feet that I've seen play at World Cups, you know, within the last 20, 30 years. It might be a bit controversial putting him in kind of that box-to-box midfielder position, but for me, it would be France's World Cup 98 winner, Mr. Zinedine Zidane, 108 caps, 31 goals. Of course, the 98 World Cup just ran the show. Like I said, the ability to read the game, to create and move up and down the field. You know, he was never afraid to track back and do the dirty work. And for me, there's a lot to be said for a midfielder like that. Zidane takes that kind of central spot, box to box, just in front of Matthäus. Now, this next position, kind of out wide, kind of inside or wide attack playmaker, the creator of total football, never won a World Cup, but it is Mr. Johan Cruyff. I think a lot of people would say he's the best player never to win a World Cup. Created the famous, we've all tried to do it at leisure leagues, I'm sure, the Cruyff turn against Sweden back in World Cup 74. Just an absolute baller when it came to football. And he takes that kind of wide spot on the right for me, kind of being fed by Zidane, being that creative outlet up the field. Now, over on the left, you know, I love an inside forward or kind of an inverted winger. I want someone that can run at defenders and can cut in, put them on their weaker side. And I think USA 94, my earliest memories really of seeing televised football, I think I was like, oh, I would have been 8, 9 years old. The player that stood out for me back then was Georgi Hagi for Romania. Of course, Romania got to the quarterfinals that tournament. The game against Colombia, you know, you had Valderrama in the middle of the park with his massive hair. Great kits on show. But that goal he scored, clearly he meant it. I think he said in interviews afterwards he'd been watching the Colombian goalkeeper, how he came off the line a lot. So he'd been practicing it. And just what a player. Ran at defenders, caused havoc. Truly exciting to watch, and never won a World Cup, but certainly that string of players for Romania back in that era were really special and a great overall team to watch play football. Now, getting to the latter end now, the support striker role, someone that, you know, can sit, you know, between midfield and defence or can push on. And is there anyone else better through the years in football than Maradona to have done that? Yes, probably the greatest footballer of all time and also the most controversial, but of course he lifted the trophy in 86. He had a goal and 4 assists in the tournament. We all we all know about the hand of God, but I think it was only a few minutes after he scored that controversial goal, he scored another 11 touches in 11 seconds against England. Just left players for absolute dust. I think Peter Reid was just, awestruck. And that was the sort of player he was. He was, you know, truly special. Of course, we have the likes of Messi these days coming through. But, yeah, Maradona for me on World Cup form definitely takes that support striker role. Now, the final piece in the jigsaw of my dream 11, the advanced forward, the poacher, the guy leading the line. There's been so many strikers through the years, and it's difficult sometimes to kind of think about players from the past and, you know, players from the modern game when it comes to records like Closer, for instance, you know, all-time leading goal scorer in the World Cup tournaments. But for me, it's got to be Pelé. 12 goals in 14 World Cups, 3 World Cup titles, with the first, you know, coming at 17 years old. A 17-year-old lad scoring 2 goals in a World Cup final is crazy. The guy could hold the ball up, he could score, he could pass. He did everything you needed a striker to do and more. And for me, he gets the final spot in my dream 11. Summer Santos is there to cap it off. Been a pleasure doing this. Of course, let us know what you think to my pick of the players. And proper headache to do. So many players to choose from. But I reckon that lineup: Buffon in goal, Beckenbauer and Moore at the back, Cafu on the right, Lizarazu on the left, Lothar Matthäus holding in front of the defence, allowing Zidane, Cruyff and Hagi to be creative just behind Maradona and Pelé. That is one hell of a dream 11 for a World Cup team. I don't think it can be topped. Hopefully you enjoyed hearing my dream World Cup 11. Of course, do check out all our beers on the website at awaydaysbeer.com, and do give us a follow on the likes of Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Just search at awaydaysbeer. For now, I'm off to have a cold one and to watch some football. Have a good one.
And here we've got Rob from Surprise Shirts.
Hi, this is Rob from Surprise Shirts. We're a mystery football shirt company set up by my son Louis when he was 16. He's now 18. Didn't want to do his paper round, so he came up with an idea to buy some shirts and sell them as a mystery concept. And we're now a fully fledged business, 4 members of staff, all family, and we've sold to 57 countries around the world. So if you're interested, our website is surpriseshirts.co.uk. Right, on to more important things. Our World Cup dream team. Gosh, it's taken us quite a while to work out our best 11. Got different generations in the office, so our knowledge of players spanning across different World Cup tournaments is different. But I think we're happy with the team that we've got. So we've gone for a 4-3-3. In goal is Lev Yashin. Lev Yashin of Russia. He is thought by many to be the greatest goalkeeper ever. Played in 4 World Cups from 1958 to 1970. He was nicknamed the Black Spider, and he's thought to be the first goalkeeper that used to rush out of his goal. Before that, they used to be quite sedentary and stay on their line, and Yashin was the first to rush out at the feet of players. We did look also at Dino Zoff and Gordon Banks, but we couldn't fit them into the structure of the team. So our goalkeeper is Yashin. We've got a flat back 4. Our left back is Maldini. Italian Paolo Maldini, obviously known as an AC Milan legend, so much so that they retired his number 3 shirt. Maldini played in 4 World Cups, but he never won one, although he did reach the final in 1994, but he was an extremely classy player. On the right-hand side, we've gone with the legendary Carlos Alberto of Brazil, who scored perhaps the greatest World Cup goal of all time in the Azteca in the 1970 final. As captain of Brazil, he was probably The first, at that time, there weren't really wing backs, but he very definitely was a fullback that acted as a wing back. So in many ways, he was a precursor to what's followed. Amazing player. Centre half, we've got two players who played against each other, actually. We've got our first Englishman, which is the legendary Bobby Moore. Bobby was captain in 1966, and Pelé said he was the best defender that he ever played against. Just a shame that we lost him so soon at such an early age, but what a player. Alongside Bobby Moore was his nemesis, rival, albeit I think they were friends, in Franz Beckenbauer of Germany, Der Kaiser, and he invented the modern sweeper role as we know it today, it's felt. Beckenbauer played in three World Cups, and he's one of only three players ever in the history of the World Cup to lift the trophy as player and manager. He captained West Germany in 1974 to triumph, and then he managed Germany in 1990 to the World Cup. Right, we've gone with three midfielders, extremely difficult this, but we've gone with, first up, Zinedine Zidane of France. Obviously, it's not without controversy, but what a player. In his generation, probably the best in many ways. He scored two goals in the 1998 World Cup final, and in 2006 he won the Golden Ball, best player in the tournament, albeit he did headbutt somebody. In midfield alongside him, we've got our second Englishman, which is Bobby Charlton. Bobby Charlton obviously won the, deemed to be one of the best players ever to play for England. He was a winner in 66, as we know, and he won the Ballon d'Or that year. And he was only booked twice in his career, which I thought was an interesting fact. And then our third and final midfielder is Iniesta from Spain. Classy, classy player. And he was a winner in, people will remember, in 2010. And he scored the winning goal against Holland in the final. So that's our three midfielders. Up front, we have Pelé. I imagine he'll be in lots of teams. Pelé played in three World Cups in 58. 62 in 1970, and was deemed to be the best player in the world, and many still feel he is. We then got Maradona, another controversial figure, but was obviously world class. Maradona played in four World Cups, and he captained. We, those of us in England, will know and remember vividly, if you were of age to do so, that he captained Argentina to the World Cup in 1986. When they knocked England out with two goals. One of them was the goal of the century. The other was a volleyball goal. And last but not least, we've got Gerd Müller. Da Bomber, as he was known. Absolutely superb striker. He scored 10 goals in the 1970 tournament. And in 1974, he scored the winning goal when West Germany won the final. Deadly striker, six-yard box striker, but... absolutely world class. So that's our team. So we've got Yashin in goal, left back of Paolo Maldini, right back of Carlos Alberto, Bobby Moore and Franz Beckenbauer at centre halves, a midfield three of Bobby Charlton, Zinedine Zidane and Iniesta. And then up front, we've got Pelé, Maradona and Gerd Müller. There's some players that have been left out of that. So you've got people like Ronaldo and Messi and Eusebio. We're not necessarily saying that we don't think Ronaldo and Messi are would fit into the best ever 11, but we don't feel that they've actually demonstrated their talent to the same extent as, say, Pelé and Maradona and Gerd Müller in tournaments. So that's the Surprise Shirts Dream 11. Hope it fares well against others. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and that is Adam from the Anglo-Italian podcast.
Hi everyone, this is Adam from the Anglo-Italian podcast here, and many thanks to Jack for inviting me to give my favourite World Cup 11. I thought very hard about this, and I've kind of based this upon kind of where I've started to follow football, but also started to appreciate footballers as well. So I haven't gone generically for the classics, but they are still household names within the footballing world. So I've tried to keep within the parameters and the guidelines that Jack has set for this. I've gone for a classic 4-3-3 approach, just to allow for the quality of players. And hopefully you'll enjoy my choices. So we'll start off in goal, and there was a few candidates, it has to be said, but I went for Iker Casillas from Spain. Great captain, but a phenomenal leader as well for Spain. I think he, to a degree, was underrated, but he was also one of those that was considered kind of a world-class stopper as well. And I think for me, he kind of was fundamental in terms of helping Spain progress as well as win number of titles, so not only a World Cup but also the Euros as well, in that phenomenal Spain side in the 2000s. So for me, he's my number one. Going then into right back, I went for Cafu from Brazil. There's nothing that can't be said about Cafu. He was, I suppose, the emphasis of what right backs do these days, bombarding forward, doing his defensive duties, but he was so strong and typically Brazilian in the sense that he could control a ball and just do tricks with it. And for me, that was phenomenal. And I think he was so advanced in terms of his positioning, how he kind of read the game, and the fact that he kind of carried on in terms of his playing career until, I suppose, his mid-30s kind of shows the strength of him and what he could do in the game. So then looking at left back, I went for Philipp Lahm from Germany. Solid, dependable right, left back, should I say. But Lahm, I felt, was one of those players that he had it all. The fact that Pep Guardiola kind of said he was the complete midfielder, complete player for him when he was at Bayern. And I don't think Germany have had someone as dependable as Lahm who could just do a job. He just seemed to seamlessly just go into that role and deliver, whether that be defensive, whether that be attacking. But he was so astute on the ball. He was so clever. He kept the ball. I barely remember him ever losing the ball. So for me, yeah, you had to have him at left back. Then looking at centre back, so I've gone for Lilian Thuram from France. With Lilian Thuram, I think where I started to see him more was during the 98 World Cup, where he was mainly deployed as a right back, to be fair. Because if you remember, at the time, France had Laurent Blanc and Franck Leboeuf. But towards the latter stages of his career, Thuram was then deployed as a centre back, mainly because at the time where he was sold from Parma to Juventus, that's where Juventus, and in particular Lippi, decided to play him. And that kind of transpired to the France squad as well. So for me, I mean, Thuram was magnificent as a player. Another one that could just play across the defensive line. But for me, I mean, he had it all as well. Strength, power, pace. He was fantastic. So for me, that's got to be in that position. Then alongside him, you can't go any further than looking at Fabio Cannavaro for Italy. Again, magnificent player. Champion, captain, the tackles. I mean, he just, to perfection, he was magnificent. Then we've got in midfield, so the three I've gone for is Pirlo, Modric and Zidane. So Pirlo, phenomenal regista. Modric is one of those players that didn't win the World Cup, but he did get a Golden Ball Winners Award. And for me, alongside him, Zidane, there's nothing more you can say about how classical he was. I mean, he had it all, despite the fact that he wasn't necessarily the paciest of players. Just people were scared of him. Just the moment he had the ball at his feet, that was it. He created opportunities, he scored goals, he assisted. I mean, just that power alongside someone like Modric and someone as delicate as like Pirlo, for example, that could ping the balls and just play it to perfection. I mean, that for me is a complete midfield. Then for my front three, I've got Lionel Messi, another Golden Ball winner, alongside R9 Ronaldo from Brazil, another Golden Ball winner. And then Davor Šuker from Croatia, again, a player that never won the World Cup, but he had intelligence. When he came into the 98 World Cup with Croatia, and that particular squad, I mean, they were just a breath of fresh air, the kind of style of football they played. But Šuker was known for a lot more previously. He was obviously playing for the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona. I mean, he was just phenomenal in that respect. But yeah, I mean, just clever. And then you've got someone like Ronaldo alongside him, who was just great, had a phenomenal touch, scared defenders. If you recall 98, obviously that was the moment that everyone kind of dreamed that he was going to have his moment. Unfortunately, he had that episode in the final, and unfortunately he didn't get to lift the World Cup then, but he did the following World Cup. So I think justice was done there. But then Lionel Messi, another player that hasn't won the World Cup yet, but I feel that this could be the year that we might see Argentina lift that famous World Cup. But again, for me, Lionel Messi is a player that is phenomenal. You can create moments with him. He creates goals, opportunities. So phenomenal. So that for me was my World Cup 11. Hopefully you agree. But if you don't, let Jack know. And make sure you follow the Anglo-Italian podcast. So on Instagram at Anglo-Italian podcast, or on Twitter where we're Italian Anglo Pod. Thanks.
And last but not least, it's Ed from the Football Tavern. Take it away.
Hello, Ed Chambers here from the Football Tavern. Congratulations on reaching 200 episodes of your wonderful podcast. That is an amazing achievement. Well done, and have a pint of beer on us. So, as part of this, part of these celebrations, you've asked us to pick our World Cup 11, our greatest World Cup 11. Now, I've slightly tailored this to myself, if I'm perfectly honest. Now, I have picked an 11 based on what I have seen with my own two eyes. So, at this point, I must confess that I didn't see Diego Maradona in 1986. So, despite him quite possibly being the best player to ever play association football, he's not in my team. Neither is Pele, neither is Johan Cruyff, neither is Franz Beckenbauer. I know. However, I've gone from 1990 onwards, which is when my love affair of the beautiful game started. So, without further ado, in goal, I have started in Italia 90, and there's always a goalkeeper that stands out in the memory in a tournament, I always think. At Italia 90, that chap was Argentinian and was none other than Sergio Goycochea. Now, Goycochea's is an interesting story, as you are probably aware. He was actually the second choice goalie behind Pompidou, who let in an absolute strange goal against Cameroon and then broke his leg in the second game. And this is where Goycochea comes in. Goycochea takes over from then on all the way through to the final. He keeps Brazil at bay in the last 16, is the hero in the penalty shootout in the quarterfinal and the semi-final, and almost gets to Andreas Bremer's penalty in the final. He really was a penalty king, and for some reason he's always stood out in my memory of being someone that I would always sort of go to if I was picking a World Cup 11. I know there's been several outstanding candidates, Manuel Neuer, for example. But for that, I have gone with Goycochea. So, moving on swiftly, right back. Right back picked itself for me. Lilian Thuram, France, 1998. Thuram played hundreds of games for France. I think we're talking about 145, I think. I believe he's their record caps holder. He only ever scored two goals, and both those two goals came in a semi-final win against Croatia. So if you're going to score two goals and they're going to be your only two goals, that's pretty good time to do it. He was outstanding in that tournament, and he actually got what is known as the bronze ball, which I didn't realise until recently. So For that reason, he is my right back. Left back, I've gone with a name that I've already mentioned, Andreas Bremer. Little known fact that I picked up recently, Andreas Bremer is the only player to have scored a penalty in a World Cup with his left and right foot. I believe that is true. You know, someone out there will probably tell me different. But Andreas Bremer was a superb fullback in that World Cup, attacking and defending, assists, goals, obviously the penalties, just an all-round decent player. If I was to liken him to a Premier League player, I would probably say Dennis Irwin was very, very similar. But Bremer, obviously part of a great Inter Milan team, and one of those players well, I'll mention in a little while. Part of my centre-back pairing, I've gone for Paolo Maldini. So yes, I know that Maldini spent most of his career at left-back, but I sort of first remember Maldini as part of the USA 94 Italian team. Remember a little bit of him in Italia 90, but not really. So USA 94, and he was playing centre-back. And I was absolutely amazed when someone pointed out to me that he wasn't a centre-back. He was actually a left-back because he was actually playing centre-half to cover Franco Baresi, who got injured at the start of that tournament. So Maldini was absolutely superb and reached the team of that tournament. So for that, I've gone for Maldini. It's very hard for someone who loves 90s football in particular to pick a World Cup 11 and not pick Paolo Maldini. So the other one's a bit of a personal choice. So come from an Irish background, a lot of family come from that part of the world. Paul McGrath. Paul McGrath in the Giant Stadium of New Jersey gave the performance of his life and many people's lives against the Italians in the opening game. He was outstanding. It is a performance that is still talked about in Ireland and many other parts of the world to this day. An incredible footballer, a man with an incredible story who, you know, he obviously had his demons in life, but Jack Charlton thought the world of him, and Paul gave his best for Ireland on every single time he pulled on the jersey. So for that reason, that's a personal choice. I've gone for Paul McGrath. Moving on into midfield. So the other German, Lothar Matthäus. So Matthäus was also part of the German Inter Milan connection. The other one, of course, being Jürgen Klinsmann, who we saw later on our shores for Tottenham. Matthäus was phenomenal in that tournament, driving forward from the midfield. I can still see him scoring a goal against Yugoslavia where he literally runs from the halfway line and just smashes it into the bottom corner. He was sort of the heartbeat of that team, led the team, lifted the trophy, all-round top man in that tournament, quite frankly. Closely behind him in that tournament was, of course, Paul John Gascoigne. Still, for me, the finest footballer that the country has produced in my time of watching football. I think Gazza was exceptional. Italia 90 was his moment, was his tournament. The tears, obviously, is something that features heavily when it comes to Paul Gascoigne. The free kick against Belgium that is chipped in. For Plats to volley, the free kick itself is always, in my opinion, heavily underrated. The assist for Lineker, the Lineker penalty against Cameroon. His all-round performance against Holland, which was exceptional. I could talk about Gazza all day, but Gazza's in. Next up, how can you have a World Cup team from my time of watching football without having Zinedine Zidane? Just an all-round football god, as far as I'm concerned. The touch, the technique, the slightly craziness, sent off a couple of times, obviously most notably in a final. How many people tried the penalty that he did in the final and it comes off? But the two goals in France 98 were, you know, obviously led
the country to winning that World Cup. And Zidane was just an exceptional footballer. Next up, my second Italian player. I've got to have Roberto Baggio. Roberto Baggio at USA 94, absolutely superb. It led the Italians to the final with his all-round skill, really. Absolutely fabulous, fabulous footballer. So I've got him kind of behind the front two. And USA 94, again, it was almost Romario versus Baggio. That's the way the tournament was. He was Brazil's top man. Baggio was Italy's top man. Got to have Romario in there. Just an all-round brilliant, brilliant forward. Great goals. The sort of half volley against the Dutch in the quarterfinal at USA 94 is just outstanding. Just a great finisher. Bit of a crazy guy as well. I kind of like a crazy genius. So yeah, Romario's in there. And then, so that's my one. I've got one Brazilian so far, and then I'm going to finish up with the last Brazilian, R9, Ronaldo. Absolutely world beater, absolute world beater in between sort of 96 and 98. At 98, he was World Cup. He was an absolute star all the way through to the final. Who knows what happened on that fateful day in the World Cup final. First, he was out, and then he was in. And, you know, we still don't know the full story of that, I don't think. He then suffered incredible knee problems, injuries, loss of form perhaps due to those injuries, regained it, came back at World Cup 2002, top goal scorer, won the World Cup. Fabulous, fabulous footballer, top goal scorer of the World Cup ever, I think, if I remember rightly. I think he's now lost that title, but just an all-round genius player. So, not a bad side. Goycochea, Thuram, Maldini, McGrath, Bremer, Mateus, Gazza, Zidane, Baggio, Romario and Ronaldo. I think that would beat a lot of sides. All the best to you for your 200th episode, and here's to 200 more. Many thanks. Bye.
Right, well, I mean, I think it's fair to say there's no bad teams in that because of the criteria, because we're talking about, you know, the best ever World Cup 11. There's no bad teams, but yeah, I really like some of the mentions. Lilian Thuram's getting a lot of love.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm very happy about.
He deserves it. He's one of the best at it. You know, he can play centre back, he can play right back. Didn't play left back a couple of times, you know what I mean? So, like, the guy's an absolute machine, one of the best players of our generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some people have done what you've done, really, and gone with kind of what they've seen in their lifetime. And to be fair, some of them that have done that, they've picked some team. And if we were actually basing it on not just World Cup, but, you know, just in general, some of them teams that only go from the 90s could easily be the best, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny how people have sort of taken it in different ways, and some of them have certain preferences and stuff.
What I do like about what some people have done, it's like a bit like what I said in at the beginning of the show, was picking some players from more obscure places to allow for ease elsewhere. I mean, like, let's go and have a look at MOTM football and Michael's team, Jose Gilliver in goal. Now,
yeah.
He weren't all that in 98. You know, he took two free kicks, he spammed them way over the bar. But we know that he could take free kicks and he would take pens and that sort of stuff. So I like the fact he's in there, and he's just allowed for the rest of his team to do what they need to do. Marcel Desailly at the back with Maldini. They played for club and they also faced up against each other for country in a tournament as well. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think that's, I kind of like that. It's almost like there's a bit of team cohesion there. In fact, three of that back four played for AC Milan. Four of the players have played for AC Milan as well. So that like there's a little bit of team cohesion, and you think, oh, okay. I don't know whether he thought of that at the time, but I definitely did. and then I'll look at, who else do I look at? I'll look at Away Day Beer Company. I'm going to big up yourself, Josh. The reason why is because I'm trying to butter you up to get some beers myself, right? But, you know, I look at his team and, you know, Bobby Moore, you know, Georgie Hadji. What a great tournament he had in 94 and 98. Mateus, someone who's it's a person here who's picked a team with position in mind. And a lot of the teams that I've seen so far, when they've picked a midfield three for argument's sake, it's like, oh yeah, look at these three great midfielders, you know. But who's going to do the dirty work? Who's going to do some shopping? You know?
That's it.
Mateus can do that. So I really like what Josh has done there.
Yeah, I think with something like this, with any of these sort of dream team type things, I think Mateus is going to be your go-to, really, because he can do anything. I mean, potentially, you could go as far as putting him as a, you know, a box-to-box or even a number 10 if you're putting backs to the wall. But if you want to be a bit more creative with it, you could even put him at centre-back, right? Depends how attacking your team wants to be. So, yeah, he's a must-in for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so in terms of your sort of top three or four, I suppose, what are we saying?
I've got like a top five that I've sort of whittled down to three.
Okay.
Victory and Vices. I'm a big fan of that team there. Main reason, 4-4-2, old school, you know. I'm a big fan of that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't want to see any of these on the left or right wing. We'd have to play a diamond with these four in midfield. He's gone with Pirlo, Modric, Iniesta and Zidane. None of those guys are running wings. And we've got Thuram and Roberto Carlos. And Thuram in 98 and Roberto Carlos throughout his whole career, both of those are able to do that job, whipping up and down the wing. So I think they can allow themselves to be narrow. And the fact it's got Miroslav Klose, the highest goal scorer in World Cup history, up top, for me, puts him in my top five. And then I would have a look at Anglo-Italian, Adam Gipke's team, 4-3-3, Casillas, World Cup winner, between the sticks. Philipp Lahm at left back. We know he's played pretty much his whole career at right back, but in a Germany shirt, left back is his home. We all know that. I think the only thing that's sort of letting that down is Lionel Messi, which sounds funny, doesn't it? But
yeah,
what's he done in World Cups?
Yeah, it's weird that, like, if you just saw that team and you're thinking their whole career, you think, yeah, Messi, definitely. But yeah, World Cups. The thing, and this is where I'm not, you know, I'm assuming you've got the same opinion on Pele in World Cups as you do normally, but
World Cups, he was brilliant. Let's be honest, I don't really rate him. I think he's a fraud. It's common knowledge, but in the World Cup, there's not really much of an argument. So I understand why people wouldn't put him in my World Cup team though, personally, but that's why I'm on the panel with you rather than putting a team in, Jan, you know?
Yeah, we need this hard hitting truth from you, I think. But yeah, I like those teams as well.
I think there are three better.
Yeah, so I've sort of been drawn to three. So one of them is 80s and 90s football.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that one.
Yeah, I think Cafu 100% goes in if we're talking, you know, like best ever World Cup 11. With the criteria, I would be tempted to use that spot for a non-Brazilian, for sure. But that back four, Cafu, Moore, Beckenbauer and Maldini, and with Dino's off in goal, that's outrageous there.
That's not going to see many goals.
Yeah, and that allows him to be a bit more creative. And yeah, he's still got Mateus there, which is a standard, but yeah, that...
No, but that's the positive. That's the positive thing, because if you have got your backs against the wall, look, I'm looking at this from a tactical point of view. You know, if your backs are against the wall for whatever reason, Lothar Matthäus can come back and sit in between those two centre halves there, Beckenbauer and Moore, and then allow for a bit more rigidness at the back. But then going forwards, Platini, Maradona, Pelé, Eusebio, Cruyff. Wow.
Yeah.
And you've got cover. You've got cover. That's mad. Yeah, that's in my top three.
Yeah, that's a top side. Also, Rob, Premiership years, he went a very interesting kind of formation here. It was like 3-1-3-1-2, which is kind of like, you know, what you'd see Pep Guardiola playing. I like it. I'm not a massive fan of three at the back normally, but I think this works.
This
with the centre backs that he's chosen.
This has got some Ajax 95 vibes about it. You know, in terms of formation, layout, not necessarily in terms of personnel, let's be real. But Casillas in goal, back three of Cannavaro, Bobby Moore and Maldini. That one is Lothar Matthäus. The three above him are Zidane, Cruyff and Jairzinho. And then a front three, well, one in behind about Maradona, and a front two of El Phenomenon, R9 and Gerd Müller, and anything German, you know, I'm a big fan of.
R9 and Gerd Müller, that is... Ugh. Naughty. Oh,
that's filthy. That gets me semi-excited, can't lie.
Right, well, I think this is supposed to be PG, Gav, so careful.
Almost said something else, so we're good. Football Tavern was my third. In the top three. I haven't got an order of stuff yet. But I like a 4-4-2, and I like a diamond. Gotchachia in goal, back four, Thuram, McGrath, Maldini and Bremer. Then you've got Matthäus again, Zidane and Gazza in the two, Roberto Baggio in front of him, and then Romario. I mean, R9 up top. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've already looked at these. I've heard what everyone's got to say, but then when I just read that out again, I don't actually know which way to go anymore. I've got a top three.
Yeah.
The order, I don't know. 80s and 90s football, Football Tavern and Premiership years. I don't know which one to go. They're my top three.
Right. I've got 80s and 90s Premiership years in my top three. And I've got surprise shirts. So I guess it's between 80s and 90s and Premiership years then, if they're in both our top threes.
That Football Tavern one's good though.
Yeah, he's been, I'm happy that he did an all-Brazilian strike force, because to be honest, I would either pick Pelé and Garrincha or Pelé and R9. So, you know, R9 Romario, he's restricted himself as well there to players that he's seen. So I think from 1990 onwards.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's good. It is good. But
it's good, but it's not the one, is that what you're saying, Jack?
Yeah.
It's close, but it's not the one.
Exactly, yeah. Sound like Paul McGrath there.
I was going with Roy Castle from Catchphrase, but maybe I'm showing my age as well. So 80s and 90s football and Premiership years. That's what we're going between. You don't like three at the back. I'm not overly a big fan of three at the back either, but that is a good team.
Mm.
What do I do? I might have to flip a coin. Let me... Right, 80s and 90s football. Zoff in goal. Cafu, Moore, Beckenbauer, Maldini. Matthias, Platini, Maradona, Pele, Eusebio, Cruyff. And then Premiership years. Casillas in goal. Cannavaro, Moore, Maldini, Matthias. Then Zidane, Cruyff, Jorginho, Maradona, Arnold, Muller. I'm going Premiership years. I'm going Premiership years. I think I'll have to say it with chest, and if I don't say it with chest, then I'll be in doubt. Doubting myself.
Yeah, I'm happy to go with that, to be honest. I'm really struggling on those to split them, so I'm happy to go with Rob at Premiership Years on that. I mean, it's... Yeah. He's been very clever with how he's done it. He's really thought tactically about it, because
precisely rather than just lobbing names down.
Yeah, there's certain centre backs that would not fit that system at all, right? He's got Matthias in there, which is lovely. I think he said in there as well, or it might have been someone else, but people have said about Cruyff and Total Football. So even though he's, you know, he's very attacking, he can, in theory, play anywhere. So he does still technically give a bit of that balance to it. And yeah, I mean, R9 and Gerd Müller.
Yeah.
Is crazy, isn't it?
That is a dub for me. I mean, yeah, 80s and 90s football, they've got Cruyff in theirs. They've got Maradona in theirs. They've got Maldini in theirs. Matthias. I think the differences for me are just the strike force, man. Eusebio, we know what he's about, what he's done. But Gerd Müller is German and therefore wins for me. And R9 is the best player ever to play the game. And he would have won the Ballon d'Or 25 years on the spin if he stayed fit. So, yeah, I'll let him have his flowers, R9. And that I think Premiership Years is the winner.
Yeah, that confirms it. Rob, if you're listening, I'm sure if you're not anywhere, you'll know by the time that this goes out. Well done. You are our winner. World Cup Dream Team. You've got Mr. Mac to thank greatly for that. So, cheers for coming on, Gav.
Yeah, no worries at all, mate. Really, really, really. I'll tell you what. You know, I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not that excited about it, but after listening to the teams, the enthusiasm from everyone that was putting the team in, and just going through all those right now, I think I'm a bit more excited about the World Cup now. I'm ready for it.
Nice. That is what talking about nostalgic football can do, get you excited about the future.
Who's gonna win it, Jack?
I'm going Brazil.
Brazil. I think I want Brazil to win it. I want Germany to win it deep down, but I think Brazil have got it, ain't they? Got it in the bag.
Yeah, I just think they're well rounded. I really think Alisson's going to have a super tournament. Like, you know, not quite to Neuer levels of 2014, but I think he's going to be key. Him and at the other end, Neymar, it's going to be now or never. But yeah, they've got a good, really strong squad anyway, haven't they? So.
Yeah,
it's hard
exactly.
To look past them.
Yeah, so Viva Brazil by the scenes of it.
Yeah. All right, nice one. Cheers, Gav, and we'll look forward to having you on again soon, no doubt.
No problem, Jack. Thanks for having me on, and congratulations, Robert, once again.
Cheers, guys, and remember to keep it.
F, 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 F